Welcome to the American Anthropological Association's podcast mini-series in support of the 2024 annual meeting. I'm your host, Matt Arts. In this mini-series, we'll talk with AAA members about this year's theme of praxis and how it relates to their work. We'll explore the application of anthropology in the present and future as we prepare to gather in Tampa, Florida from November 20th through the 23rd. We'll also discuss how anthropologists are responding to the current challenges in Florida and beyond and get some tips for when visiting Tampa. All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the first episode of the 2024 Annual Meeting podcast. I'm here today with the Executive Programming Committee for this upcoming year. The theme is Praxis. I'm here today with Kamala Hayward-Rotimi, Executive Director of the Knowledge Exchange Research Group, also with affiliation with Duke University. Rachel Watkins, Visiting Associate Professor of Anthropology and Curator at the University of Pennsylvania. And David Simmons, Associate Professor at the University of South Carolina. So thank you all for joining today. Would you each briefly introduce yourself and, you know, share a little bit more about your role with the annual meeting?
All right. Well, greetings, everyone. I am David Simmons. I'm an associate professor of anthropology and health promotion, education, and behavior at the University of South Carolina. It really is a pleasure to be serving as a co-chair with my fellow co-chairs here. And in terms of my involvement with the program, actually, like my fellow co-chairs, we have a long history of involvement with the AAA in various leadership positions. We've all, at various points, sat on the executive board. We have been on the program committee of previous AAA meetings. Some of us have had other leadership positions within the AAA. I've been the president of the Association of Black Anthropologists. So a long history of involvement with the AAA. And again, it is such a pleasure to be serving as a co-chair with, you know, my brilliant, bold co-chairs.
So I'm Kamala Hayward-Rotimi. I am a practicing anthropologist. I am the executive director of the Knowledge Exchange Research Group. It is a research group that looks at Black diaspora folks' interactions and engagement with digital spaces and digital knowledge. My research is also looks at knowledge production, specifically digital knowledge production. And I forgot to add that I have an affiliation with Duke University. I'm also a culture and social policy strategist. And so I bring all that together. It's still under the digital umbrella. As David said, you know, it has been really a sort of coming home moment and really great to work with both Rachel and David. We all have extensive history with AAA and being engaged in service to AAA. Rachel and I also were the co-chairs of the Anthropologist Goes Back to School initiative. And as David said, I also served on the board recently. When I served on the board, when I ran, one of my main focuses was to make sure that practicing anthropologists also have a space in AAA. And that we as anthropologists in general who are from minoritized communities have a voice and have a way to be actively represented within our organization.
My name is Rachel Watkins. I am a visiting associate professor of biological anthropology and curator at the University of Pennsylvania, and I'm one of the EPC co-chairs. I identify as a biocultural anthropologist, so a lot of my work looks at the intersections of human biology, biological well-being, and social well-being. I've served on AAA committees and initiatives over the years, including being an EPC co-chair for a program in 2014, serving many times on the executive program committee. And I also recently finished a post as a member of the Commission for the Ethical Treatment of Human Remains for the American Anthropological Association, because that's a key area of concern. And speaking of the conference theme, praxis for the association and our discipline. And with that said, I think that the three of us are, really uniquely represent many of the research areas in anthropology. That's not always something that happens among the co-leaders. So that's really exciting. And I think that has so much to do with what we've been able to pull together for this year's conference.
Yeah, great. And so the theme, as noted, right, is praxis, the applications of anthropology in the present and the future. So how does this theme reflect current challenges and opportunities in the field of anthropology from all of your perspectives?
Yeah, so I would like to kick that off. That's a great question, Matt. And I sort of would like to reverse engineer and talk a little bit about how this came to be, how the praxis theme came about. When the idea of, putting together a theme for this conference coming from Transitions, the previous conference, one of the key interests was how do the four fields of anthropologists of anthropology get represented? How do we facilitate a conversation, a critical conversation of where anthropology is and how we engage with anthropology? And most importantly, the praxis part comes from how do these anthropologists engage with society and the communities that we work with? And so that was one of the main focuses of the theme. And then with that also, the EPC committee, which I want to give a very big thank you to. The EPC committee represents the different four fields, represents practicing anthropology, not just me. We had a member who's a practicing anthropologist, and we had early career, mid-career, senior anthropologists all represented on the committee. And all of this was to move towards what kinds of questions we need to ask, what kinds of solutions, and what kinds of research is coming out in response to those questions. While we were doing that work, we were also very cognizant that we were going to do the conference in Tampa, Florida. A lot of the hostile legislative policies, the current, local, not local, but state government was basically presenting challenges to communities that we work with. And so in response to that, members on the EPC and we as co-chairs were very concerned that we go in with the intentionality to represent what, the communities that were being harmed and not go in to a situation where we are just co-signing the hostile legislation. And so as a result, we contacted and spoke with different advocacy groups. This was in the earlier days of planning for the conference. And we asked the simple question, do you want us to come? Should we come as anthropologists and conference, especially in light of the fact that some conferences, some associations have chosen to not go and conference in response to those legislative attacks? And what we received was that, yes, we need you to come. In fact, one of the leaders, administrative folk at Equality Florida said, we need you in this room. Then our colleagues who are in Florida, the professors at various universities and colleges said, we need you to come. We need you to come because we actually need support right now. And we were like, okay, we are going to go with this intentionality. But we were also very aware that these legislative attacks posed a real possible harm to our colleagues who are like Association for Queer Anthropologists, LGBTQIA plus identified. And so we recognized the seriousness of making sure if we are going, we have to make sure there's an intentionality to really represent or rather support the folks that are saying we need to come. And in addition to our colleagues, in addition to the administrative folk at Equality Florida saying we need to come, we noticed that there were Black and brown LGBTQIA plus folks that were saying you need to come. And a lot of times when there are difficult situations and very hard situations, the issues and challenges of minoritized groups are not as centered. And so we took all of this into account. We also recognized that there were people on the EPC, some who were pro going to Tampa, some who were not pro going to Tampa, and some who were like, I'm in the middle. And we took all of that and we worked with, this is praxis. This is what happens when you're trying to make sure that you're engaging and collaborating. This is the real world. This is our association, you know, and that's how we wanted that part of praxis to show up. And then also, when we talk about praxis, we want to speak about how our different within academe, how our scholarship, you know, shows up with all of these theoretical and conceptual interventions on systemic injustices. You know, how do we work with our communities? How do practicing anthropologists work with projects to, you know, create collaborative interventions to address infrastructures that are pushing down certain communities? And so all of that goes into the idea of praxis as a thing.
Yeah, I mean, so much of what Kamala is saying here, you know, gets at this idea of critical engagement, you know, with our publics. And, you know, in particular, this notion of epistemic violence and, you know, the epistemic violence of the state, you know, in this case, but also, you know, the epistemic violence that is very much a part of the history of the discipline of anthropology. And so creating interventions around how it is that we produce knowledge, you know, what knowledge is, you know, considered the appropriate knowledge, et cetera. What these meetings have allowed us to do as EPC co-chairs is begin a conversation, you know, not only with our publics, right? Like Equality Florida, the NAACP, you know, et cetera, locally, but it's also allowed us to have critical conversations within the discipline itself. And so one of the things that we thought was critical as EPC co-chairs was initiating conversations with the various sections, you know, of the AAA to talk about this decision, this plan to go to Florida, to allow individuals, you know, and groups to air what their concerns were and talk through those concerns and work through how it is that we could develop solutions for those concerns. And again, you know, this is the practice of praxis, right? So again, you know, as Kamala was saying, this was really our central approach, you know, to the meetings this year. We imagine that this is going to have an impact on how it is that future meetings are approached. You know, this idea of critical dialogue, conversation within the organization, between, you know, AAA and its membership, between, you know, membership and the various publics that we represent and are in conversation with, you know, on a daily basis because of the work that we do. We imagine that this is a way that future meetings are going to be thought about, conceptualized, and planned.
For example, going back to my work around the ethical treatment of human remains, this is a kind of centralized hub where folks in biological anthropology, joining with folks in other subfields, are dealing with the broad scope of epistemic violence around the acquisition and use of the remains of largely marginalized people for the production of scientific knowledge. And praxis in the form of, for instance, engaging with descendant communities that are associated with these historically mishandled, misused, and desecrated human remains is a central part of our work now. And so, you know, one of the areas that's going to be highlighted in people's panels, as well as keynote address, as well as some of the opportunities to actually go around Tampa, involve looking at this critical connection between the past and the present, the ways in which people, the way that people are treated in life and how people are treated in death run in parallel. We're really happy to say that we have Antoinette Jackson, who's a professor at the University of Florida, who's going to be doing our keynote address. She and her work around burial sites, she's been highlighted on 60 Minutes. And so she and some of her collaborators in the community are going to be joining us for a really unique keynote panel where some of these issues are addressed. So we've taken great care to highlight praxis and critical engagement in epistemic violence conceptually, theoretically, as well as very much so on the ground. And that speaks to what David and Kamala were talking about in terms of reimagining the conference and doing so in a way that requires engagement beyond our academic research.
Yeah, and so then building on that, you know, what do you see as, you know, a potential future here? What are some areas where, you know, we think we need to kind of evolve or adapt or grow into?
Yeah, I think there are a number of areas that we have to grow and adapt into. You know, one of them is just the continual effort to decolonize the discipline, right? Which again gets at these issues of kind of knowledge production and who is it that's producing knowledge for what ends. You know, we have had interventions in the past around this issue, you know, and in particular, I'm thinking about the seminal work of Faye Harrison in Decolonizing Anthropology. You know, and we have different populations within the discipline, you know, be they feminist anthropologists, you know, be they queer anthropologists, who work in various ways to decolonize the discipline. But, you know, this is something that is always a work in progress. So, you know, that's one area I think we need to work. Another area, you know, we need to work on, and this goes with decolonizing the discipline, is really working on more collaborative, participatory approaches to how it is that we do anthropology. I think applied anthropology in particular, you know, perhaps has been a guiding force with regard to how it is that, you know, we can be more collaborative and participatory. I know that within medical anthropology, which is my sub-discipline, there's been a real concerted effort at developing, you know, what is referred to as community-based participatory research, you know, where you view the communities that we work in as collaborators in the design, in the analysis, and in the production of knowledge, you know, for a particular project. So in my mind, I mean, those are two very kind of broad areas where there's still room to grow, where we constantly have to be vigilant, and we really have to make more of a concerted effort, you know, to make sure that we're democratizing knowledge production.
Yes, just want to build off of David's democratizing knowledge production point. One of the things that if I had like a wand and I could just like, or maybe more so a genie, and I had a wish, you know, for anthropology for the present and going into the future. You know, one of the things that drives my work as a policy strategist and, you know, as a practicing anthropologist dealing with digitality and knowledge production is there's this part, you know, in our articles where we say like further suggestions or, you know, things that we can do in the future, you know, that end of the article. And a lot of times I find that those are actually probably like maybe unrealized solutions to some of the things that we were talking about in the bulk of the article. And I want to see how we as anthropologists can actualize some of these really in-depth theoretical and conceptual interventions for like systemic injustice and different things that we put forward critically about the societies and communities that we study. And one of the things that I think is really important, we're in this information economy, and it's not going away. Even though somebody told me about 20 years ago that the internet and social media was a fad, we see on so many different levels how, you know, of course, with AI, how that's really running amok with some of my colleagues and good friends as they're in the academy, trying to navigate what to do with this next level of knowledge production or copy or however you want to see it at this moment. How do we ensure that the knowledge that anthropology produces is translatable to the general populace? And how does it factor in to correct some of the inaccuracies that come out within the information economy, right? Some of the information that is being circulated on the webs, you know, in social media and what have you. I really think that that is a space that our knowledge and our research can inform.
On a related note, to what both Kamala and David said, I'm so glad that we mentioned Dr. Faye Harrison, because part of what our work centers on and what we're trying to do as a unit, as EPC co-chairs, is create really significant full circle moments that we can all come together collectively and recognize in one space that help us to push the boundaries of what we understand is part of the canon that shapes who we are as a discipline and the canon that we need to draw on to take anthropology into the future. And Dr. Harrison's work is so central to that. The Decolonizing Anthropology edited volume that she did in the late 80s, early 90s was actually a four-field volume. It was a four-field manuscript. Michael Blakey had a piece in there, biological anthropologist, that actually kind of outlined the approach, this critical humanistic approach to studying human biology that informed the New York African Burial Ground, which was one of the first bioanth-based interdisciplinary projects that included the descendant community in the creation of knowledge in terms of the community helping to shape, if not outright guiding, the research questions, as well as the full scope of research that took place. And so in terms of the canon that shaped us, and we know the canon that has influenced the discipline in ways that are not always regarded, you know, we're all kind of rooted in this tradition of what's called African descendant scholar activism, which is inherently interdisciplinary, which in many ways is inherently democratized in terms of who's a part of the knowledge creation process. And to, you know, give Dr. Harrison and Dr. Ira Harrison more credit where credit is due, they edited a volume called African American Pioneers in Anthropology, where much of that is laid out. And Erica Williams has since edited a second volume, kind of laying out again this actual canon that doesn't always make it into our discussion. So, you know, the way that we've shaped the conference has been all about being able to acknowledge all of these different canonical sources of knowledge that make us who we are as a discipline.
You know, there's a couple themes in all of those responses about collaboration, about applying anthropology, but also buried in there was, you know, and this is maybe from the start to now, a few comments about really reaching out beyond the discipline. You know, 60 Minutes was mentioned earlier, right? And so, you know, what strikes me is, you know, it seems like we have so much to contribute, but how do we take that next step and start collaborating, you know, better with people outside our discipline? How do we communicate better with people outside our discipline so that we can bring this important toolkit style of thinking, you know, and all of the benefits that we can contribute? How can we make that much more entrenched within society and get sort of outside of our own bubble? Any thoughts there?
Yeah, you know, if I could begin. I mean, honestly, what Rachel was saying about the tradition that the three of us have been trained in, we have been exposed to the models, you know, of doing that, right? So if you look at people like Zora Neale Hurston, right? If you look at people like Pearl Primus, if you look at, you know, Ira Harrison, you know, if you look at John Gwaltney, for example, you know, we've grown up with, we've kind of cut our eye teeth on examples of anthropologists who are adept at communicating, you know, with their publics, right? And so, you know, we've been fortunate to kind of follow in that tradition. But I will say that the American Anthropological Association has also done a great job in recent years of putting together, for example, workshops for anthropologists in terms of translating. And these are workshops primarily about translation, right? How do you translate academies, you know, to a vernacular, you know, to a way of talking that is readily accessible to the lay public? Because I know as a discipline, we, for many years, have kind of operated in an echo chamber. You know, we've been kind of preaching to the converted, as it were. And very oftentimes when we gather professionally, that is what we hear, right? We hear you know, the really up-to-date jargon and, you know, the kind of theoretical language that's, you know, a la mode, et cetera. And our professional kind of coming together, those are not always opportunities where we see people off the streets, right? We don't see the lay public at our professional gatherings. You know, so that way of talking about things is really kind of reinforced. But I think one of the challenges for us, you know, moving forward is really to kind of standardize methodologies for being able to translate, you know, our kind of highfalutin language, you know, to the lay public. And one of the questions that constantly comes up is this question of relevance, right? How relevant is anthropology? Particularly when we look at the so-called experts on television shows, we listen to them on radio, and none of these experts on social issues typically are anthropologists, right? I mean, they may be folks from other disciplines, they may be from education. You know, in the case of multiculturalism, for example, you find a lot of education scholars talking about multiculturalism, you know, or they're sociologists, etc. And I think some of those other disciplines have done a better job at developing their translation skills. And they've done a better job at developing language in ways that connects with the lay public. And so I think one of the challenges for anthropology, for our discipline, is to kind of get out of our own heads, as it were, you know, which is kind of ironic because, you know, that's kind of what we do as a discipline, right? We get out in the field, we talk to people, you know, we rap with them, we gather stories and et cetera, and then we write it up. But something gets lost in the translation, right? So I think moving forward, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, we're really going to have to focus a lot more on. And I think, you know, these meetings in particular, you know, have helped us at least as an EPC, you know, really kind of begin that process of translation as we've talked with various groups and organizations on the ground, but also within the discipline itself.
So many things, David, just made me think about. But Matt, to your question, how do we have anthropology and anthropological research engage with the community and the populace? My big thing that I think would be another, I shouldn't say genie, because I think it can actually be real. I really think that this is a space where there should be more collaborative projects between academics and practicing anthropologists. Practicing anthropologists, full transparency, I was trained to, be an academic. I came across practicing anthropology because of some of the things that I wanted to do that became my passion. I say this because, as David said, AAA has done a good job, is doing a good job with different initiatives to help anthropologists learn how to translate and how to make our jargonese more understandable. I learned that on the ground. And so I know that in the various sectors that practicing anthropologists work in, there's certain ways we have learned to present our materials and our reflections that directly addresses the translatableness of that information. And I believe that the expertise of, you know, our colleagues that are academics bringing in their perspectives and then the expertise of practicing anthropologists together is what is that secret sauce that has not been explored. I'm not saying it has never happened, but it's one of the things that does not happen as readily. There's sort of a bifurcation of those spaces. And so I think that that would be a very sort of structural way to figure out how to bring anthropology to the populace.
Appreciate, you know, that suggestion. And I guess to tie it back to an earlier theme of colonialism, I know you're all building on a tradition, but how can we continue, you know, that thread and bring that kind of collaborative spirit then, you know, to others, like such as partnering? Anything particularly related to the kind of colonial theme that shows up within the theme of the annual meeting?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not really enough to acknowledge the kind of colonial roots of the discipline. You know, we need to, you know, you will hear people say, yeah, you know, anthropology is the handmaiden of colonialism, you know, and then, you know, kind of, that's always kind of a caveat, like, you know, when you're explaining that you're an anthropologist to people. But, you know, beyond kind of acknowledging that, I think, again, really making a concerted effort, you know, through conscious, you know, conscious kind of thinking through, you know, our methodologies, you know, how it is that we practice anthropology is critical. I know, you know, in my own research, for example, with Haitian agricultural workers, you know, the approach that I took, you know, in that research was very much a community-based, you know, research, you know, approach. And when I started working with the community, there were lots of conversations, lots of dialogue with community leaders, with the community itself. And it was the community itself that began to identify issues, you know, that they were facing and that they found challenging. And, you know, it was based on those conversations, you know, with the local community that I began to develop a research agenda that helped address the challenges that they were facing. And the community took an active role, for example, in the development of the research itself in terms of questions that they wanted answers to. They weren't so interested in the kind of analysis, you know, and they left that to me. But in terms of writing up the research and bringing it back to the community through a series of town meetings where we talked through and plotted through the results, you know, opened up a very kind of different space. And, you know, and the community was very vocal and, you know, had opinions about the research, you know, which were, of course, incorporated into, you know, the final product. But that's just an example, I think, of an effort to really kind of center the community in the development, in the conceptualization of research. I'm not saying it was perfect. You know, I'm not saying it was always an equal relationship all of the time. Sometimes, you know, the community had the upper hand. Maybe sometimes, you know, I as an individual researcher had the upper hand, whatever. But, you know, but for me, at least, it was, you know, an effort at a more kind of democratized mode of knowledge production.
And I would say, as far as how that's being tackled within the conference, we as an EPC prioritized panels that were actually grappling with the traditional role of the anthropologist and making sure that there were some critical discussions between the researcher and the community of study. So we have quite a few panels that are, you know, actually talking about collaborative work, as Rachel mentioned, even our keynote. I think it's the first time there's going to be a keynote with community members participating. And so that's how it shows up within the conference. And we're hoping that these panels will generate even more critical discussions about collaboration and actual efforts to recognize the communities that we work with as not just stakeholders, but, you know, key knowledge bearers in our research.
And so I know we've already talked about the state of Florida and the impact on our colleagues and of course, the broader public there. But sort of building on that last theme, what would you want to see, you know, members do when they're in Florida? How might they sort of show up and, you know, be present and sort of challenge this in a productive way?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, first and foremost, I think all of us see the meetings here as an opportunity to really kind of amplify local voices. You know, that's, we've been very intentional about centering Florida voices, you know, in this conference. And I think we've also been very intentional about developing a conference that is sensitive to things like local minority-owned businesses, you know, LGBTQ-owned businesses. And, you know, there's a motto, you know, that Rachel developed, you know, which is act, educate, invest. And, you know, it's a model that has really kind of guided our planning for the meetings. And so it's our hope that when members, you know, in particular go to Florida, that they will take advantage of opportunities to invest in local businesses, you know, especially businesses that are owned by minoritized populations. It's our hope that members, when they show up, will take advantage of, you know, some of the local opportunities to interact with minoritized populations in Florida, to hear their stories, to understand, you know, better their plight. You know, there are a number of historic communities in Tampa. As you know, there's a very well-known and old Cuban community there that there will be opportunities to interact with. You know, the kind of civil rights history of Tampa is very well known. And one of the members of our LOC, her father is a very well-known civil rights icon in Tampa. And so, you know, it's our hope that when members show up, you know, that they show up not just to attend the conference, obviously, and present their paper and see their friends, but they really use this as an opportunity to plug into the local community, the local businesses, and local history in ways that, again, you know, facilitate the conversation. And by the way, I did use the word LOC. LOC refers to local organizing committee.
And we want to also give a big thank you to the local organizing committee also, and our chair, Cheryl Rodriguez. Yeah, so ditto to everything that David said about how to show up. The only thing I want to add is, you know, when I've been talking with some of our colleagues there and some of the community members, they want to make sure they're not forgotten when we leave. And so one of the things as far as reimagining the conference and reimagining our interactions with the communities where we conference is some of the, there's going to be suggested places for donations put together by the AAA conference organizing staff. And so please take a look at those and see how you can continue supporting, even if, like David said, if you know you're going to give some support financially or whatever way you decide to do that. But let's not forget when we leave, because it's really a really rough situation for Floridians right now.
All right. So what I want to say in closing, because we have used the word decolonizing many times, and we have rightfully, you know, kind of situated our understanding and implementation of that term, drawing on the work of Faye Harrison and others. I also want to highlight that much of our efforts, many of our efforts around decolonization are not simply informed by the term as a concept. There's this great paper that came out in 2012 by Tuck and Yang called Decolonization is Not a Metaphor. And that's really what we're trying to actualize here. They make excellent points about how many times decolonization goals can be incommensurate with decolonization because we go about doing so in a way that doesn't acknowledge the very complex entanglement, using their terms, of settler, native, enslaved, social relations. And because of that, what can happen is that decolonization efforts can end up centering the mitigation of guilt, et cetera, on the part of settler populations, on the part of white populations. And so what we've really tried to do in bringing so many folks together in terms of really challenging ourselves to consider and to hold all of the people we're trying to bring together at the conference, some of whom are in favor, have been in favor of going to Tampa, some of whom have not been in favor of going to Tampa. You know, different, you know, people representing different social and political perspectives who are our colleagues. We've tried to hold all this so that we remain mindful about those entanglements, so that the things that we're doing around educating, acting, investing, you know, creating space for critical engagement of our work are actually leading to the actual decentering of settler perspectives, of white supremacist perspectives, and at the same time also creating space to center and empower and, you know, highlight communities and the work of marginalized folks. So yeah, it's been really great to work with David and Kamala in particular. We should also disclose we all have a kind of history together in some way, shape, or form of working together. And I don't know that we could have, you know, ended up with what we have without that. So, you know, in many, many ways, history is important.
Well, Rachel, Kamala, and David, I thank you very much for taking the time today. Appreciate it, and wish you a great conference.
Thanks for listening. We look forward to seeing you in Tampa this November. For more information, check out the conference website at annualmeeting.americananthro.org. And if you like what you hear, please also check out the AAA podcast directory for other great anthropology podcasts, including my own, Anthropology in Business and Anthro TUX. Thanks again, and see you in Tampa in November.